Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today at the intersection of addiction and homelessness, Hancock County will be the recipient of a five-year, $2.5 million federal grant to help individuals and families through a program called Project Home. We'll learn more. Also this morning, strategies for using back-to-school season as a springboard to teach teens healthy money skills. And summer vacation season is drawing to a close. All the more reason for a relaxing getaway to the beaches of the Sunshine State. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Monday, August 19th, 2024. The state of Ohio is launching a campaign aimed at boosting the number of volunteer firefighters in the state. Kind of interesting. Did you see this story? The effort includes public service announcements that will run on television and appear in social media ads over the next 8 weeks. It says about 70% of Ohio fire departments are staffed by individuals who donate their time and their energy to help their community. 70% of Ohio's fire departments are volunteer fire departments. Statewide data shows the number of emergency calls went up by 9% between 2018 and 2021, while volunteer numbers have dropped by about 6.5%. So if you have ever thought of becoming a volunteer firefighter, they say this is the time to do that. They're running a big public awareness campaign and a recruitment campaign there for volunteer firefighters in the state of Ohio. Did you happen to see this story from over the weekend? I'm not sure. Was it Friday that this happened? I saw it, or no, I guess it was earlier in the week. I saw it on Friday. I saw the story. It was on the national headlines, and usually it takes a little while for stories like this to make it to the national level. But Michigan police say two bystanders, talking about heroes in one's community. Well, volunteer firefighters certainly fall into that category. So do these individuals in Michigan. Police say two bystanders helped a pair of girls escape when a man tried to force them into his car in broad daylight. This was in Macomb County, Michigan, suburb of Detroit. Two separate incidents occurred about an hour apart on Tuesday afternoon in a couple of different suburbs in Macomb County. The first incident was an attempted kidnapping of a 15-year-old girl about 1:30 in the afternoon while she was just walking along the side of the street. Endy Bala, I think is his name, allegedly grabbed the girl by her head and neck, forced her into his car when a bystander happened to see the incident and intervened and rescued the girl, but he got away. About an hour later, in Sterling Heights, he grabbed a 7-year-old girl, snatched her right off her bike, and forced her into his car before attempting to drive away. Authorities say the girl's aunt ran toward the car and flew into the driver's side window. And a passing driver blocked the guy's car from leaving the scene until police could arrive and take him into custody. So that's, I mean, kudos to all of the individuals who stepped up and kept potential tragedy from occurring. Crazy. In the middle of the day, broad daylight there in suburb of Detroit. But thank goodness everybody's okay, except for the attempted abductor who is now safely behind bars. Crazy. Speaking of Michigan, I happen to see this story among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. This from Grand Rapids, Michigan, where a group of four pickleball players will try to set the Guinness World Record for the longest consecutive play of pickleball. They'll be doing this in the fall, because you don't want to do it in the summertime when it's still hot. You want to wait until it's, you know, cooler. This marathon pickleball effort will be a little bit more comfortable and more doable. I would think if you do it in the middle of the summer, it might be a heat exhaustion and all of that. It'll happen November. November, the group will try to play for 30 consecutive hours. They're raising money for the gift for Gift of Life Michigan, as one of their fellow players, it says here, is in need of a kidney transplant. And so that is what started this whole effort. The current record is 27 hours and 5 minutes, which was set by a group of pickleball players in Montana. So they're trying to beat that and go for at least 30 consecutive hours November 23rd. So we will follow up on that, put it on the calendar, and definitely pay attention. That's, I mean, it's for a great cause. But the first thing that I saw, I thought of when I saw that story, clearly pickleball is a relatively new phenomenon, because the world record for the longest consecutive play is currently only 27 hours and 5 minutes. You got to think that eventually this record will be like 12 days or something. You know, that's these records start off small and grow over time. I have to think that, you know, it's a sign that that is a sport in its infancy. Here's some cheery news to start your day. It seems that women in the United States, women, listen up. Women in the United States have the lowest life expectancy among industrialized nations. The lowest life expectancy among industrialized countries. This is according to the nonprofit group, the Commonwealth Fund, which used data from the CDC to calculate that American women in 2022, this is the latest year for which full data is available, as of 2022, American women have a life expectancy of 80 years. That is 2 full years shorter than the life expectancy of the nation with the next lowest, which is the UK, the United Kingdom. And it is 7 years shorter than the two nations with the highest life expectancies for women, Korea, presumably South Korea, and Japan. South Korea and Japan, the highest. And the U.S. is at the bottom. I mean, 80, still longer than men, but the lowest of industrialized nations. So, with that in mind, here's how you fix that. Or, I think this could be a big part of fixing that. This story, unrelated, but I saw it on the Newswire as well, and I thought, well, this kind of speaks to that. Creative and artistic hobbies can have meaningful effects on your health. According to a new study in the journal Frontiers in Public Health, more than a third of those who were asked about their levels of loneliness, anxiety, and life satisfaction, or lack thereof, and these individuals were asked to give their impression of whether life is worthwhile. Among those who have been involved in arts and crafts in some capacity over the past month, people engaged in these creative activities scored higher in terms of happiness, life satisfaction, and the sense that life is worthwhile, as compared to those who were not involved in arts and crafts hobbies. So, if you want to live longer and make more of your life, then unleash your creative side is what I read into that. You're welcome. Maybe we can reverse that trend. I just thought it was kind of interesting. And lastly, here among the first things you need to know, most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. I know you're just waking up this morning and probably not thinking about what you're going to have for dinner yet. But here's an interesting idea to ponder. Not so much what you're going to have for dinner, but when you are going to have dinner this evening. Apparently, this has a big impact, much bigger impact than you might think, on your overall health. Again, I just want to keep you healthy. I just want to keep you healthy and happy. And this is what it says. Dinner times have a much bigger impact than you think. According to Reezy, Is that what it is? R-E-S-Y, Reezy, Rezy? Apparently, this is an online restaurant reservation platform. I am not familiar, but that's really immaterial. According to this study, I guess, more people have been making reservations at 5:30 p.m., and that can lead to an improvement in your health. 5:30 p.m., as opposed to later. It used to be that it was a little bit later than that. But the time of most dinner reservations has been creeping earlier and earlier. Fortune magazine spoke to Tara Schmidt, who's a registered dietitian at the Mayo Clinic, and she says eating dinner earlier can help those who suffer from heartburn and acid reflux, because eating 3 to 4 hours before bed can help prevent gastrointestinal distress. The theory is earlier dinners allow time for some sort of physical activity after dinner. Like maybe you go for a walk. You ever had that? I'm going to walk it off. And really, that is, there's some truth to that. There's some logic to that. It helps with digestion as opposed to just sitting or even going to bed right after eating. She says that digestion is best when light is present. So if you eat before it gets dark, here in a couple of months, you want to eat dinner before it gets dark, you're going to have to eat at like 3 o'clock in the afternoon. But digestion is best when light is present and when the body is active. Now, the part about the body being active certainly makes sense. But there you go. Eat dinner earlier, and it will have a positive impact on your health, according to the experts. So again, you're waking up this morning. You're probably not thinking too much about dinner, but just want to plant that seed in your brain there. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Monday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Partly to mostly sunny skies expected today, a high in the mid-70s. Mostly clear tonight, a low in the mid-50s. The Findlay Police Department is warning people to drive sober or get pulled over. The department will be participating in the National Drive Sober or Get Pulled Over campaign. The campaign goes through Labor Day, which is September 2nd, and the primary focus is removing impaired drivers from the roadways. The police department says motorists can do their part by obeying all traffic laws, never driving impaired, and always designating a sober driver. Blanchard Valley Medical Associates in Findlay is celebrating a milestone and saying goodbye to one of its founders. This year marks BVMA's 50th anniversary of dedicated service to the community, and one of their founders, Dr. Leroy Schroeder, is retiring after a nearly 50-year career.
People have been very good to us here at BVMA. We've tried to do our best as physicians to take good care of them and care for them the best we could. There are always ups and downs of every illness, but we try to make the ups better than the downs.
Get more of our conversation with Dr. Schroeder at his retirement party in this story on our website. It's been about 2 weeks since recreational marijuana sales began in Ohio, and they're already exceeding expectations.
Sales statewide are at $11.5 million and counting. This comes as a study predicts our state could see sales reach $1 billion in the coming years. The increase in revenue comes with an increase in cost for the customer, something that one local dispensary says it's already seeing.
I would say probably about 20-30%.
Onan's Tracy Townsend reporting. Hancock Public Health is providing car seat checks and free car seats to qualified families during events this month. The next event is coming up on Thursday. The health department says if you're wondering if your child's car seat is installed correctly, come on over to the Family Center parking lot on Thursday, August 22nd from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., and they'll check out the car seat to make sure it's installed correctly. Get more in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
So our cover story this morning, at the intersection of addiction and homelessness, Just about a week or so ago, it was announced that Hancock County will be the recipient of a five-year, $2.5 million federal grant to assist individuals and families through a program called Project Home. Joining us this morning with more details is the director of Hancock County Alcohol, Drug Abuse, and Mental Health Services, Precious Stubbe. And Precious, thanks very much once again for joining us. We appreciate it. Adamus is one of many entities that are involved in this grant, but I understand you'll be the kind of the administrator of this, kind of overseeing it. Is that accurate?
Well, good morning, Chris. Thanks for having me. The grant funding is federal funding from SAMHSA, mm-hmm. the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, mm-hmm. and so they are willing to grant to county level entities.
Yeah.
And so we're actually the grant recipient.
Gotcha.
And so we'll have the responsibility for the monitoring and that kind of thing with the federal government, mm-hmm. but not with the implementation. So implementation involves the primary implementing organizations will be the City Mission and Family Resource Center.
So I mentioned that simply because this is a really good example of a number of entities working together for a common goal here.
Absolutely. And I think that we've certainly learned there is no other way.
Mm-hmm. it's not something that
you just
any
can't go it alone.
Entity could do alone.
Correct.
So this is kind of an interesting meeting of issues here. We know that addiction is an issue. We know that homelessness is an issue. Talk a little bit about how the confluence of those makes both of them more difficult to address.
Right. So, you know, every program that exists has criteria that you fit mm-hmm. to be accepted or to not be accepted.
Right.
And so, and that's for people's protections and so on. So mm-hmm. right now, if you went to the City Mission and you were intoxicated, you would not be eligible to mm-hmm. stay because you're intoxicated.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's hard for people who are addicted to a substance mm-hmm. to have that period of time when they aren't intoxicated. Mm-hmm. So the concept of the low barrier shelter is that the typical shelter will remain, mm-hmm. but part of the shelter will be sectioned off, have its own entrance mm-hmm. for individuals that really the criteria is that they show up. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that they have that opportunity for shelter, food, take a shower. Mm-hmm. But more importantly with this is an opportunity to engage with treatment. So the concept is you meet people where they are at
right.
and continue to offer them help.
And you talk about how addiction makes finding a place to stay difficult. The converse is also true. It's very difficult to get treatment for an addiction if you don't have those basic needs met.
Absolutely, because you know if you don't have a roof over your head, it's hard to think of anything else, mm-hmm. right? We've all heard about the basic needs, food, shelter, clothing.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't have that, how do you think beyond that? Not to mention the fact that the idea of, okay, I have no place to live, but I'm going to walk into a treatment agency and start working on my mm-hmm. addiction.
Yeah.
You know, so we're trying to take services to people, meet them where they are.
Right.
Try and have a meaningful engagement with
it
them.
Really is, when you think about it, a bit surprising that it's taken this long to come up with a solution, because I would imagine that it is certainly not uncommon for these two things to intersect.
It absolutely is not uncommon. I think part of the reason why we're slow to get here, not just here, but across the country, is mm-hmm. that we have plenty of people to serve with the criteria we already have in place.
Good point.
And so it's not that there's a lack of things to do, mm-hmm. But I think there has been a recognition across the country, this increase in homelessness, and people are like, I see homeless people here.
Yeah.
You know, but what we've realized is part of the issue is because we as a social service system, are excluding them
mm-hmm.
because of the rules that we have in place
yeah.
for good reason.
Again, yeah, it's not that the rules aren't there
right.
for good reason. They
yep.
are, but what you end up with is a fairly sizable number of people who need help falling through the cracks as
exactly.
a result.
Exactly. And so it's how can you be creative and create specialized programming that doesn't put anybody else at risk in the other kind of programming
mm-hmm.
And still be able to meet needs.
So, again, it seems as though, as you describe it, you're meeting the immediate need of shelter for those who are dealing with homelessness. But again, then the hurdle becomes the addiction part.
Right.
And how are those services then given?
So part of the grant will pay for a full-time staff person
okay.
from the mental health system
mm-hmm.
that, to be present at the shelter.
So it would be there at the shelter.
Right. So they can see people on both sides. They can see people that are there that come in for the low barrier,
mm-hmm.
but they can also see people that come in for the typical shelter. So it's bringing mental health and addiction services into the shelter.
So you call it Project HOME, and HOME is an acronym for, help me out here.
Yeah, Housing and Opportunities for Meaningful Engagement.
Meaningful Engagement. Is this something unique? Is this built on successes of a similar program somewhere else, or is this a new concept?
I have to give credit where credit is due. Catherine Bosman, who's the director of City Mission,
mm-hmm.
Was most familiar with this concept. And it's been almost 2 years that the mayor asked for an unhoused coalition to be put in place in this community to
mm-hmm.
say, what we see individuals that aren't housed, that are on the street, what can we do?
Mm-hmm.
And she brought forth this concept. It was something that she was familiar with. And then we continued to do research about it and really were convinced that this was the best solution for our community.
So as we mentioned, this is a five-year, $2.5 million grant to facilitate this program. Maybe this is jumping ahead a bit, but what happens at the end of the 5 years? I mean, what are you looking long-term? I guess kind of take us through this. How long will it take to implement? How do you judge success? Although that, I would
yeah.
imagine, is fairly straightforward. But then at the end of 5 years,
yes. you know. So Catherine, of course, has been, as I said, we've had an unhoused coalition for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's several steps with this. So you may have heard about Martha's House. So the women and children that currently reside at the shelter will move to Martha's House.
Okay.
And then the current City Mission, as I said, there'll be a part of it that is partitioned off for the low barrier shelter.
Mm-hmm.
The grant actually starts on October the 1st. She is really hoping to have that partition spot off, by the first of the year, hopefully.
Okay.
That's an aggressive timeline, but
mm-hmm.
but she's a powerful woman. and then, so this already is a combination of private funding that she's been able to get through fundraising,
mm-hmm.
Assistance with other grants and so on. So this is just a piece of that. And of course, when you start a program is when it's most expensive.
Right.
So we're hoping at the end of 5 years, we're able to have it really fine-tuned and know, okay, what is the minimum it's going to take to be able to sustain this
yeah.
over time?
Because it sounds like it is something that could make a serious dent in both of these problems. So
mm-hmm.
you want to believe that it's still going to be there after the 5 years is
absolutely.
Up. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So again, it looks like relatively quickly this will be up and running in some form.
Mm-hmm.
Where do folks get more information about all of this?
The project management, the day-to-day stuff
yeah.
will be handled at the City Mission.
Okay.
But people are welcome to call the board office. As I said, we'll have the overall responsibility for
mm-hmm.
tracking everything and getting it all submitted and staying in compliance.
Again, Precious Stubbe is Director of Hancock County Alcohol, Drug Abuse, and Mental Health Services, talking about Project HOME, which is about to launch locally. Again, as we mentioned, the intersection of homelessness and addiction in the community, both serious problems, even more serious when they're combined. We've got a link for more information at our webpage as well. And Prisha, thanks very much for dropping by. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, you know what? Back to school time, we talk a lot about establishing good routines, and our next guest says that should include healthy money habits as well. How to make informed money decisions that will lay the groundwork for financial independence. And Matt Gramata is head of family banking at Chase. Matt, what are some of the steps that parents can take to teach their kids some of these good financial habits?
It's a great time of year to do this, right? To start the conversations, your kids are preparing to go back to school, to start with some super simple, basic tips and tricks to help them. One of them that I love is a basic budgeting rule that is called 50-30-20, right? For any money that comes in, 50% should go to needs, things you need to spend money on, 30% to your wants. And then 20% goes right into savings. This works great for older kids, frankly, and adults too. And
right.
It can also help younger kids to learn the difference between wants and needs.
So what should those needs be? I mean, again, when we're talking about kids, they don't have to pay the rent. They don't have to pay, you know, mortgage, electric bill, that kind of thing. So, I mean, these are the things that for adults we would consider needs. What should fall under that category for young people?
That's right. So for younger kids, right, you're right. It is a little bit more conceptual, but it helps to help them understand, right, like what are potentially you as the parent spending money on in terms of needs, right? For an older kid that might have their own car and need to put gas in it or need to buy school supplies, right, those are things that are needs versus going out with friends or frankly, making a splurge purchase, which you can do if you plan for it.
Right. And that's part of one of the lessons that you're talking about imparting to saving for a future goal or even saving for a rainy day. You know, again, helping our kids start saving early with those goals in mind.
Absolutely. And, you know, most adults have learned as kind of a savings habit. It's the habit part that's so hard when you haven't done it before. Right? And so how can we help our kids build that habit? Really two steps. The first step is make sure they have a bank account that is right for them. At Chase, we have first banking for younger kids, but for these older kids, we have high school checking. And if your kid is headed off to school, whether it's four-year college or community college or vocational school or technical school, we build college checking. So first, make sure they have a bank account that's right for them. All those accounts from Chase are free. And then second, right, help them build that habit by remembering to save. And the easiest way to remember is not have to. There are some great tools out there that make it so easy to save. And one of them from Chase is called AutoSave, where you can set up a set it and forget it rule to automatically move money to your savings account, say, whenever you get paid or by some time frame, like every month or every week. Having an account and then helping your kid build that habit without even having to remember can make all the difference.
Now, when it comes to putting all of these pieces together, I mean, again, you know, for the things, for those needs, for the things that, you know, you decide that you're going to make your kids responsible for on their own, for those things that they want, that they have to plan for, really the key is the B word, budgeting. That is tough for everyone. Even adults struggle with budgeting. So how do we introduce this concept and get our kids to start budgeting on their level without, you know, making this something that their eyes will glaze over and, you know, they'll just ignore?
Totally, right? And let's say you've maybe started the conversation with that 50-30-20 rule. Something that we know doesn't work so well, right, is just the, hey, you should be spending less, right? Because as you said, right, that doesn't often land with our kids.
Right.
So
right.
Perhaps easier way to start the conversation around budgeting, aka spending well, and putting money aside is really about being aware of your spending. Right. If you just help them be aware, be mindful of A, what they want, right? B, how they sort of plan for those purchases, the stuff that they want, and then C, being aware of the other things they're spending on that might impede their ability to have and be able to make purchases they want, aka don't make impulsive decisions. The key to that is really staying on top of it, which you can do with a great mobile app like Chase's.
Yeah. And again, as long as they're keeping track of, you know, these things that they're spending, that they're actually spending money on, and they get this look at it as part of that budgeting, actually, I found, at least for me, over the years, part of it actually takes care of itself. I mean, you look at it, you pretty much know where the money is going, where it needs to go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And avoids any unnecessary surprises.
Yeah. Now, obviously, you know, kids are impacted by inflation, rising costs of the things that they need and want to buy, just like the rest of us are. And we, you know, referenced kids who are, you know, going on to college, trade school, whatever it might happen to be, really any educational expense. How do we help kids stay ahead of rising costs? For the sure. things they need and want.
Yeah, I think helping them figure out how to get a little creative in order to spend less can help a lot. So, for example, if they want to keep costs down in transportation, reminding them that they can carpool with their friends or use public transit. If they want to cut down on food costs, connecting them to meal prepping services or even sort of helping them think that through or reminding them to use those campus meal plans might be a way.
Or getting into the kitchen on their own.
Right? And then the last piece is really there are so many ways to get discounts out there. Certainly lots of student discounts if they are in school. And another way to do it is if they are a Chase customer, we have a thing called the Chase Offer Program, which is basically free money. We offer offers to save money on brands that kids love, that adults love. You go into the Chase mobile app, you turn on these offers, and they are automatically applied when you purchase at these retailers. It's like free money.
Again, Matt Gramada is head of family banking at Chase. We're talking about establishing good money habits for our kids during this back to school time. It's a good opportunity to start instilling these good habits in our kids. Where do we get more information, Matt?
Folks can go to chase.com/student banking.
Again, Matt Gramada, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having us.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
A Florida doctor is in a little bit of hot water after not wearing his hearing aid and failing to hear his colonoscopy patient screaming in pain. Wow! A Florida doctor in hot water after not wearing his hearing aid and failing to hear his colonoscopy patient screaming in pain. Gastroenterologist Dr. Ishwari Prasad has been placed on probation by the state medical board for his actions or inactions, the Tampa Ambulatory Surgery Center in June of last year. Apparently, the patient was not sedated properly when Dr. Prasad inserted the scope. The patient began to yell and shouted that he was in pain and could still feel everything. The doctor did not hear him because he did not have his hearing aid in. Oh, oops. That is a big oops right there. There's my apologies to anyone who may have a colonoscopy coming up. One of the first things before they go to put you under, check to make sure that the doctor has his hearing aid in. Very, very important patient tip there. Whew! Yowza. Elsewhere in the broken news. Man. Elsewhere in the broken news, a man from Virginia who is visiting Yellowstone National Park is now facing federal charges after allegedly stealing a Park Service truck back in early part of August. He stole a Park Service truck. According to documents filed in federal court, Alan Bowling of Virginia, who was vacationing apparently at Yellowstone, attempted to buy a beer from Old Faithful Upper General Store around 4:40 in the afternoon, but his credit card was declined. And so he did what any reasonable yet inebriated person would do. He left the store and jumped into a Yellowstone Park service station heavy wrecker. He took the truck. The truck was spotted being driven down the wrong way on a one-way road, driving off the road and stopping near the post office and ranger station. Mr. Bowling was then chased on foot by park rangers and eventually stopped and detained at gunpoint. He refused to take a sobriety test and is now facing multiple charges, including DUI, destruction of federal property, and disorderly conduct. Remember, it is a federal national park, and so this is a federal crime. Because his credit card was declined and he couldn't buy a beer. It sounded like he didn't need an extra beer. He didn't need another one. Yeah. Let's see. Elsewhere in the broken news, in Iowa. I'm not sure exactly where in Iowa this is. Apparently, a father and son got into a heated and violent exchange. According to local news reports, police say the man's adult son shot his father. The adult son shot his father, David Carpenter of Burlington, Iowa. There it is, Burlington, Iowa, now behind bars and charged with attempted murder after he shot his father, William, who was transported to the hospital where his injuries were described as non-life-threatening. So dad's going to be okay. Son is in a bit of trouble. Apparently, there was an argument. The son retrieved a gun from his room in their shared house, threatened to shoot his father, and then later pulled the trigger, which he says was an accident. And what was this argument about, you might ask? Well, apparently it started over smelly feet. That was how the argument started. Over smelly feet. It then escalated to other family issues, but it started with smelly feet. The story does not say who had the smelly feet, whether it was the son or the father. I'm not sure, but one of them had smelly feet, and it led to gunfire. That family must be so much fun, like at Thanksgiving dinner. You know, that... Wow, dad's going to be okay. Son is facing charges. Argument over smelly feet. A Vermont man may have been on the wrong side of the law, but you certainly cannot knock his work ethic. Stephen Lowe, age 42, is facing charges for pulling off not one, not two, but three bank robberies in 2 days. And that's not all. Apparently, Mr. Lowe knocked off two banks on day one and then stole a car from a gas station as well. As according to court documents, he then pulled off another bank robbery for good measure the following day. Police caught up to him later that day when he confessed to the robberies, and he said he needed the money to buy cocaine. He faces up to 20 years in prison if convicted, but, you know, seriously, you can't fault his work ethic. I mean, he's a hard worker. If he'd just funnel those energies, he would have been better off. And finally, in the broken... Three banks in 2 days. That's impressive. And finally, in the broken news this morning, when Margaret and Corey Beinert saw an ad offering a free stay at a resort in Ibiza, they decided they couldn't pass it up. Margaret and Corey are actually travel bloggers. They, you know, travel and write about their experiences and apparently have a rather large following online. And so they saw an ad offering a free stay at a hotel in Ibiza. And they thought it was too good to pass up. The stay was a little bit different, though. It wasn't your typical hotel room. The offer was to stay in a completely glass-enclosed room constructed in the lobby of the Paradiso Ibiza Art Hotel. A glass room constructed in the lobby of the hotel. They thought it was a funny and clever idea, so they jumped at the chance. Because, after all, it's free. But as it turned out, the sleeping arrangements were not quite as amusing. What the ad didn't say was that the lights in the glass room never turned off. So whoever was sleeping in the room became sort of part of the artwork in the art-themed hotel. A video posted by the couple shows staff mopping the floors and passersby staring into the room, into the glass room, some even taking pictures of them as they lay in bed. That's cheery. On top of that, the room was not completely soundproof, so they could hear everything that was going on outside the room and vice versa. The review of the hotel that they later published: totally worth the visit, despite having one of the weirdest nights of our lives. The same could be said of the other hotel guests, I would think. Weirdest night of their lives, too. There you go! That is today's Broken News Report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Get ready for another season of Ohio State football with the Kickoff Show on WFIN. Paul Keels, Jim Lachey, and others will preview the upcoming season, offering analysis along with players and coaches' interviews.
The Kickoff Show, presented by Citizens National Bank, Macomb VFW, and Buffalo Trading Company.
The Kickoff Show, Monday night at 6 on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
Time now for your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. Back to school season upon us. It is the first Monday of the new school year for Findlay City School students, first Monday of the year. A lot of the other schools aren't back in session yet, but will be soon. This, I thought, was kind of interesting. Many parents, according to a new survey, many parents have plans to make the back-to-school experience quote-unquote magical for their kids. This survey, 2,000 parents with children between the ages of 6 and 12, so we're talking elementary and middle school, young middle school, intermediate school age kids, 86% of parents say they are trying to bring back their children's excitement for returning to school, and parents have done so by including surprising their kids with their favorite snack, you know, tucking it into their lunchbox. 43% say they have done that. 33% say they slip notes into their kids' lunchbox or backpack. Just a little note to encourage them, you know, as they head back to school. And 19% say that they give their child some sort of lucky charm. A necklace or a bracelet with a lucky charm to help their school day go smoothly. Obviously, more of a psychological thing. Well, all of those things are psychological things, but ways that you can help get your kids in that back-to-school mode and make it, quote, magical as they head back to class. 86% of parents are likely to pack a sweet snack for their kids on any given school day, although it says the most frequent days for including a special snack, sending the kids to school with a special snack for lunchtime, Mondays and Fridays are the most popular days. So just kind of interesting there, way that you can make it a little bit special for your kids heading back to school. Yeah. Okay, so now that we are fully into back to school mode, if you are looking for a travel destination because maybe you don't have kids to worry about back to school, or maybe you still have a few days before the kids head back to class and you want to just take a quick getaway, one destination that offers a blend of stunning natural beauty, rich history, and endless adventure, Fort Myers, Florida might just be the perfect destination. And Miriam Dotson is here from Fort Myers this morning. She is communication manager for Fort Myers Islands, Beaches, and Neighborhoods. Why do you say that Fort Myers is the perfect end of summer escape, Miriam?
So first of all, thank you so much for having me. This is so much fun. I have plenty to talk about here, so I know we can't get to everything. So I will tell you that right now is the great time to come because it's a little secret spot in the calendar. So as you mentioned, maybe school is about to start and you want to get away. Well, it's going to be a little bit less crowded here right now, mm-hmm. and it's going to be a little bit cheaper, actually. Your accommodations are probably going to be at its lowest rate that you'll see because our high season, as we call it, really starts in November, goes to about April. Beautiful, amazing time to come during those months. But this is the time where you kind of get to come right before it gets super busy. And there's so much to do indoors and outdoors here.
Well, let's talk about some of those experiences and events that you have here during this, I guess what they call the shoulder season.
Yes, the shoulder season, right? So we still have a lot of things going on as far as events. We have a big fest coming up. It's called Island Hopper Songwriter Fest. It's a music festival. It goes about 10 days. It is from September 20th through the 29th, and it really gets you to explore the area from the coastal communities to the inland area to downtown Fort Myers, all through music. So most of these venues, there's about 50 of them, are all going to be free events. There's only a couple of ticketed events, and those will take you, again, all the way through the beach. So you get to kind of eat at these places, have a drink or two, get to go seeing it and exploring it all at a really good price point, all while listening to music and these intimate performances from some of the best singer-songwriters within the world. So that's one thing that you can do. Of course, you want to get to the beach. You want to explore our parks and nature preserves and get out and about. We have 100 different islands in this region, 50 miles of shoreline, and different ways you can get out and get on the water through kayaking, paddling, boating. It's all accessible and a lot of different things that you can do inside too at the Edison and Ford Winter Estates. That's one location too that has a lot of history. You've got an indoor museum and a lab. Thomas Edison spent a lot of time here along with Henry Ford. So you get to learn about all of that and see the home.
Well, if Thomas Edison and Henry Ford are you know, part of the history, I mean, who are we to argue? I mean, obviously, it's a pretty good escape if that's where they went to escape. I mean, you know, let's be honest. No, great stuff for literally.
Go ahead. I was just going to say this is where they also made a lot of their discoveries, too. They picked this region not just because of its natural beauty, but also because of what they were able to discover here.
And so, again, just from those examples, and again, you're just kind of scraping the surface, clearly there is literally something for everyone, regardless of what you're interested in, what you're into.
Yes, exactly. So when I talk about, you know, a family vacation, great. Maybe you're a couple looking to escape. There's Lover's Key is a state park. It's a beautiful beach with lots of different things you can do there. So maybe you're a couple who wants to hit the spa and a resort and that kind of thing. Or maybe you want a guy trip or a girl trip. We always talk about these girls getaway, but, you know, the guys can come down here too and enjoy some sports. We've got the tip-off coming up in November. We do spring training here for a couple of different baseball teams, the Twins and the Red Sox. So we love our sports community. So lots of different things to do for everybody.
Now, it also says here in my notes that there have been some recent accommodation renovations and updates. Tell us a little bit about this.
Yeah, so we're happy to report. You know, we've been very busy here. You want to be able to come and feel comfortable, and there's a lot of different updates to our beach resorts, including Sundial. That's always been a favorite. They are recently renovated. We did everything, so it's all brand new. That is beachfront, beautiful, beautiful location on Sanibel Island. Also downtown, the Banyan Hotel just renovated more than 100 different rooms. And I also want to mention places like those little cottages, you know, those beach escapes, but you don't want to maybe stay in a large hotel, you want to stay in a little cottage. There's a lot of that, and Captiva Island Inn offers those kinds of places to stay, and those were all just renovated for vacation homes, too.
And mention this, getting there is probably easier than maybe what you might think.
Yes. We are happy to say that there's been a lot of new direct flights just offered all through Cleveland, Cincinnati, Columbus, Detroit. You can also connect through Atlanta if maybe you're coming from somewhere that needs to get on a connecting flight. There's so many different options. And really, within just a matter of hours, no matter where you're coming from within the country, you can get here. So sink your toes in the sand, maybe have a drink, maybe listen to some live music, just escape for a little bit. It's totally doable for a weekend or a full week or two as well.
There you go. For you can have breakfast in Ohio, and by lunchtime, you can be having your lunch on the beach. Miriam
yes,
Dodson
yes.
is communications manager for Fort Myers Islands Beaches and Neighborhoods. Where do we get more information and inspiration, Miriam?
Yes, we like to say inspiration, too, because once you kind of go to the website, it's visitfortmyers.com. You can find out more of all of the things I just mentioned. You can find an event calendar as well. And you can look at our social media channels. We like to show off there a little bit. It's at Visit Fort Myers.
Again, Miriam Dodson from beautiful Fort Myers, Florida, with us this morning. Miriam, thanks very much for taking the time. We'll see you on the beach.
Thank you so much. Hope to see you here soon.
And that will wrap up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. Once again, that is goodmornings.net. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.